Welcome, everyone, to The Sixth Sense with Tara Ventura, psychic numerologist and channel. She assists you to envision your potential and discover your unique voice, bringing lively, purposeful, and spiritual topics to the table. Relax and enjoy with an open heart, bringing fun, insights, and captivating viewpoints. Here now is Tara Ventura.
Welcome, 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 my fellow compassionate beings. And do you have your party hats on today? My engineer and I were just talking that we have our party hats on today. It's very sunny in Austin, Texas, and we're happy about that because it has been a little bit cooler this month. But I hope you're having a fantastic day or evening, depending on where on this beautiful earth you're located. Okay, so here we're going to touch a second on Mercury retrograde. Don't you love it? This is a way for us to reevaluate and pause so that we can move forward with greater strength. It's about looking at the past and not only at our lives, but, you know, I was thinking earlier today about past history. And so how has history propelled us to move forward? You know, from my last show with Zoe from Sweden, I had several people comment to me about our conversation saying during the show that, you know, we were talking about Jesus was a great man. He wasn't a God. He was a great man, an intuitive and a healer and a caring person who, in my mind, carried the torch for the evolution of humanity, right? You know, he said, believing in him, we can do all things as he could do and even greater. So what can we accomplish and how can we use our intuition now in this 21st century to really move things evolve? There you go. Where things are changing so quickly. What ideas can we bring forth for the betterment of all and our evolution? You know, if you think about how quickly things have moved, I mean, really, in the last 30 years, technology has gone crazy. We're all connected. We're via one in this universe, and it really has changed the way that our everyday lives are. So what ideas can we bring forth? And, you know, the technology, this was out of imagination and intuition on the part of those who created it. So in using our psychic intuition and intentioning, we can create unbelievable things, really fascinating stories, lives for ourselves, our loved ones, and for everybody in this world. You know, I was listening to a song last night, and I was in the car, and it was a beautiful song. It was a classical music, and it honestly captivated me to the point where I was envisioning the scene while this music was playing of a gorgeous meadow with people laughing and enjoying themselves and dancing. It felt very Renaissance. And you know, the word Renaissance means rebirth. Wow, my imagination was having fun. So what can we do as individuals to rebirth and create explosive fun and laughter so that it feels like our expression and contribution matters not only to us, like I said, and our loved ones, but to the highest good of everyone on planet Earth and our evolutionist society. So as Mercury asks us to do so, let's pause for a moment. Let's get a cup of coffee, cup of tea, hot chocolate, and let's evaluate so that we can move forward in a conscious way. Ah, thank you for that. And I want to introduce my first guest, very, very interesting man. His name is Dr. Elliot Maynard, and he calls himself a neo-Renaissance scientist and conceptual designer who walks his talk, lives his dream, and is driven to share this information with others of like mind. His background spans the fields of global ecology, coral reef ecology, oceanography, and tropical rainforest biology. So obviously he's a water guy. I'd love to know his numerology. I may ask him when he's on the air. In addition to his work as a futurist, a lecturer, an author, an educator, and global economist, Elliot is an accomplished artist, sculptor, musician, underwater photographer, and documentary filmmaker. Because of his unique abilities to bring future concepts into the present and integrate them into existing social structure, he has been referred to some of his colleagues by the human from the future. I love that. He says his personal life mission is to share some of the amazing things that he has learned over his lifetime and provide a potpourri of cutting-edge information so that we can research items of interest and judge for ourselves, which is always a good thing. He's written a book that is now out, and it's called Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World that includes 25 master keys for doing so. Hello, Dr. Elliot, are you on?
I am on. Hello.
hello, and welcome. So glad to have you today. And I want to say why, because, you know, when your publicist sent me your information, I'm like, is he a scientist that is also metaphysical, or is he metaphysical that has a science background? And so I've decided, I don't know what your point of view is, but I've decided you're both, that maybe some of your earlier experiences in life and throughout life, your personal human experiences have enabled you, of course, to have these metaphysical experiences, and then you have a science background to go along with that. Would that touch on anything that resonates with you?
Absolutely. And, you know, I think the two are inseparable. Like many of the folks who are listening out there, I was a sci-fi addict from the time I could read. And so I was always engaged and interested in things extraterrestrial, in things metaphysical, although I didn't have many metaphysical teachers around in my early age, but I know that I always felt that I didn't really fit very well into human society, and I know I'm preaching to the choir here, probably, for many of you.
Well, I would say everybody's raising their hand and saying, me, that's me, how do I fit into this society? And interestingly enough, as you say that, when I was reading your book, you put in the intro, or in the first part of it, that in grammar school, you were asked to write down what you would most like to do in this world. And you wrote that you wanted to leave some kind of mark on the world, and you wanted to meet the first aliens. So, welcome to the world, huh? Welcome to our world.
Well, yes. My teachers didn't seem to react negatively to that, even though they must have rolled their eyes a couple times. And I was engaged. I was very fortunate to be raised in a family that loved music. And I played the piano and especially the violin quite seriously. Mm-hmm. And I probably got one of my first tastes of metaphysics from the fact that my violin teacher, also my grandmother on my mother's side, were Christian Scientists. And I remember he used to say, if he had a cut finger or something, he says, I have to concentrate on that to get it healed. And all this jiggled or jogged my something in my mind, and I never forgot this. And so as time progressed, I went on and on and read the usual metaphysical books, and then I actually became a higher initiate in one of the metaphysical groups and traveled, did some kind of missionary work, just spreading the light, essentially. And so I have traveled, I have immersed myself whenever possible with other cultures, and all of this has been distilled down into this book.
Got it. Okay. We want to hear much more about that book, and and fun things like channeling and pendulums and all that great stuff. We're going to take a short break, and we will be right back with Dr. Elliot Maynard. Okay, welcome back. My name is Tara Ventura, and welcome to our show today. We have on a fascinating person, Dr. Elliot Maynard, and may I call you Dr. Elliot or Dr. E?
Absolutely.
Okay, great, great. I appreciate that. And you were just talking about your book, and you know, we said a little bit about your background. What it feels to me is that you have and have done all of this and continue to do all the spiritual and the metaphysical, and yet you're bringing it into form. And in numerology, we would call that a number four. And so it feels like you're bridging the spiritual and the material together, and you're grounded. So really appreciate giving your ideas on these master keys. And you were just talking about our book, so about your book, rather. So who and what are we becoming, and how is this important for the ultimate survival of humans and planet Earth?
Well, essentially, over the years, I've come to the conclusion that the genetic programming that we have received was pretty good when we were hunter-gatherers. You know, kill or be killed, you're always fighting for survival, survival of the fittest. But if you look at the past history, the rise and fall of civilizations, of great religions, of great institutions, you will see that we're doing the same thing and we're still doing the killing each other. It's very barbaric. On the other hand, there's a significant segment of the population who have now reached the point by raising their vibrations where they can begin to take this new challenge, this evolutionary imperative, which will involve, it means that we've come to the point where we can no longer solve the old problems using our old linear brain and the old survival characteristics. We have to begin to open our innate consciousness, our ability, our intuitive senses, and interface with this living information field. Some call it God, some call it, there are many names for this, but it's right here. And when we start to quit dwelling on the past and exist in the present, deal with the situations in the present one at a time, we will begin to I can almost guarantee you that if you open your minds to the possibility first that this quantum field exists, and then start to notice when it comes into play. I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir with you, Tara, so maybe you'd like to add something here.
Well, of course, I've worked in the quantum field, and I think that's really where it is at. I know asking the questions is so important because the field is open to, you know, to all the energy that we could possibly access, right?
Yes, and in my world, this new world where I envision a new type of human, I call him Homo Novus, which just means new human, in my world, there would be psychic technologists in the White House. Our president would openly discuss this sort of thing. Great leaders have always had prophets and seers, if you start reading history very carefully, although it's been couched, it's been very quiet under wraps because so as not to disturb the other segments of society.
Society. Well, you know, it's so interesting you brought that up because as I'm reading your book, I'm reading, successful corporate leaders of the 21st century. And you said as well, political leaders will be spiritual people, will be spiritual leaders, rather. So, you know, that just feels good. It just feels good to put that coat on, you know?
yes. And remember that in our Constitution or Bill of Rights, I can't remember which, there is a statement that says these truths shall be self-evident. Now think about this. This means that when you know the truth, you know the truth. And what you just said about feeling right about this, mm-hmm. that's the cue. That's the quantum field telling you you're on course, keep going. So what we all need to try to do is to spend more time operating in this new zero point kind of place where when you come into the quantum field and start to resonate with it, there is no past and future anymore. And this is why you can begin to see things that would be coming along in the future in linear terms, but they're already here. And this is why people think you're doing some magic when you manifest things in the present.
Right, because they are already here. There are holograms, right? Would you say it that way? And we can create, well, of course, there's holograms within holograms, and the present and the future and the past are all one, really, right?
Yes, and in some senses, the what we regard as the physical world here is essentially a holographic construct, which is essentially made mostly of energy, and I know we all know this. There's an interesting, one of the points I brought up in my book is bringing channeling up to a very professional level. Because why? Because if you ask the proper questions, you mentioned this, just as with a computer, garbage in, garbage out, but mm-hmm. intelligence in. Intelligence out, intuition in. So we can cross-reference this with different channelers and different groups of ETs, and they do have their own philosophies and agendas. But one thing stuck in my mind. I attended a workshop with Daryl Anka, who has channeled this entity called Bashar for over 25 years. And what happened was I asked some very specific questions, and I got a phone call, an email from the videographer for Bashar and for Daryl Anka, and he said that he was fascinated with the questions I was asking because they were much like some of the ones he had asked. Now, one of the things that came down from channeling, I think this is a beautiful example, is Bashar said that if you took a human, one of us, probably one of the more surfing on the leading edge of change, like most of mm-hmm. us who are listening, and took them back 100 years and plopped them right in the middle of society, that they would appear to be glowing. Their energy level would be so high. Now think about this. It's pretty fascinating.
Wow. Wow, that is so interesting. And of course, channeling is one of my favorite things. And folks, we're not talking about, and you know this, we're not talking about channeling negative entities. We're talking about channeling to connect to your higher self, your higher consciousness. Right, Dr. E?
Absolutely. And I do, I have worked with a number of world-class channelers, and I prefer the channelers that can put their little self, if you want to put it that way, their consciousness perched on their shoulder like a parrot, and they will remember, have a recollection of what is said, the physical body will, the person. So I believe channeling, why would we use this? Because it can save us thousands of years in time, it can save us billions of dollars in money, and it can solve problems that are unsolvable by pure hard science.
Right, because this is really tuning into the divine guidance, our spirit guides, right? The energy, our angels, whatever you want to call it, this is tuning into that and receiving information quickly, snap of the finger quickly, right?
Oh yes, and that's the key right there. We get it. I like to tell people that it's similar to the old cassette tapes or reel-to-reel tapes we used to use when you wanted to go to a specific, say, a music song or piece of data, you have to wind the tape backward and forward. This is the way the linear mind works. If we go to the quantum nonlinear mind, think of a CD, a compact disc, and the laser will go to any specific point on that disc and bring that information down in digital format. Digital format is encoded light energy. Bingo.
Exactly. Bingo. That's right. Okay, this is fascinating. We are going to take a short break and we will be right back. Okay, thank you. Welcome back to The Sixth Sense, Tara Ventura with Dr. E. I call him Dr. E. Dr. Elliot Maynard, he wrote a book, has written a book called Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. And also, folks, call in and ask Dr. E a question. The number to call in is 888-627-6008. And so we're talking about channeling, and he mentioned something very interesting a minute ago about 100 years ago, we would have been channeling. We would light up. You were talking about maybe auras or something to that matter?
It would be a physical manifestation. It would be more than a more psychically sensitive person reading an aura. This would be apparently a physical. It would be a strong enough phenomenon to create that physical manifestation of someone actually like glowing. So you can see now how some of these ancient visits from entities or individuals from other places with higher vibrations, avatars, and teachers which seem to be glowing. And the great painters of the world in the Renaissance painted these halos. They got away with the halos. Mm-hmm. They didn't always get the aura, the full aura in.
Right, exactly. And you know what I tell a lot of people, and I don't know if you agree with this, but I feel like it's true. A lot of the great painters, artists, creative people of the world, musicians, whether it's, you know, John Lennon or you go back to Gershwin or whoever, they channeled. Don't you feel like they channeled the information into their work, right?
Absolutely. There's no question about it. Now, what I feel a great difference is between then and now is that now, since we have been forced to raise our vibrational frequency set that is us, we now are able to contact, we're able to do things and operate consciously with this field. Now, that is the key. Conscious co-creation. And you can just see the benefits that just keep going on and on and on with this kind of approach.
Right. And there are many. I mean, there's healing. Right. I know you talk about that in your book. In fact, you taught at the Hopi Reservation, and that's so fascinating. But you're big on teaching children to use their psychic abilities and also to use L rods and pendulums, correct?
Yeah. Yes. And I'll give you one little example of what happened. I for about 6 months, I had the opportunity to teach children at the Hopi Reservation. Most of my work was in creating a new Hopi worldview that would fit in with the white man society. Well, I had 35 kids in 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, half Hopi and half Navajo. And in one room, I was trying to teach them science. And these kids were terminally bored by almost anything in school. So one day I took out the rods and I said, you know, we Vahanas, that's their word for white people, have our own ways of looking at things. And this is one of them. And I showed them how the rods would work. And one of them said, okay, we're going to hide something and you see if you can find it. And I went, and so briefly went in the back room and they hid a little film can that had something in it. And I came out with the rods and I they were watching me where the rods were pointing, and I walked over to the place it was, opened a drawer, and this is what, and they went, "Oh, you're witching us." That was the reaction. But
that
was
funny.
Just one of my experiences. There are many, many more, and I have been best friends with a great Hopi healer, the last Hopi medicine lady, and on and on. So there are many, many adventures and revelations to me from working and living on the reservation.
I can imagine. You could write a book just on that, right?
Yes, I could, but I don't think I would want to, because you know, one of the things that happens when you reach a state of a certain state of wisdom, even if it's by default, and living a long age and reading a lot, or enlightenment, however you want to call it, you begin to see the real reality show as it is, and this is why. A majority of the human race likes to sit couched in their own indifference, like shells upon the shore. That's what Simon and Garfunkel's song. Mm-hmm. Instead of they stay in their indifference, and the brave new mind is meaning you have to be brave enough to move out of that comfort zone, which will disturb many people. But there are a group of people now, and they're forming a larger and larger group. And the more we do this, what we're doing today, this is something that could not be done in the times of Jesus as a teacher when he appeared. If you think in 2 months, you know, of the time he started teaching, the next town and the next town over, and finally the Romans got wind of it. Now, if he popped in, well, we could put him right out on blog radio. And my God, we have the new global brain overlay, new
program. Oh my gosh.
That.
Right.
With the internet. So, wow. Now we have an avatar to the X power. Think about that.
Yeah, exactly. And that's really what my intro was about, was bringing that type of human being to the forefront and then moving forward. It's amazing what all we can do. So, you know, you were talking about L rods and pendulums, and real funny, very quickly is, you know, I was teaching a class and I did an intro to the class, and I brought a string and wooden clippy clothes hangers and had the classmates make pendulums out of them. And I am not kidding you, Dr. E. I said, okay, now clip the string to the clothes hanger and then ask a yes or a no question. And I mean, for 10 or 15 minutes, they were engulfed in that. And I thought, well, should I just stop the whole intro class? Because I think what it did, you know, it took me a while to figure out, but I think what it did was to let people connect to that higher wisdom, to that spirituality that they have. And that was just one way of doing it. So very, very interesting.
Well, yes, we do acknowledge that using L rods or a pendulum is a crutch, but it's a very nice and simple way to get some feedback from your intuitive senses. And I went on to tell the kids, I use the pendulums. L rods. I carry them everywhere with me in my computer bag or suitcase when I travel, and I ask questions. And I set it up so that wide open. If the two rods swing so that they're on 180 degrees, one going to the right, one to the left, that's a full yes. And
yes.
Then no can be when they come together in front, parallel, or they actually cross.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the interesting thing that you can get degrees of yesness and no-ness, you can check different priorities of things you have to do in one day and say, which should I do first? You have to be very careful to ask the question very, very clearly. And then you can set priorities. You can do this. I've been doing this in my work and career for years, and very quietly usually. The interesting thing, of course, the kids wanted to find out about who loves each other and all of this with their boyfriends and girlfriends. But I'm sure they would move on to greater things given a little time. But anything like this is the feeling, which you mentioned earlier, of doing this. And it's like so rewarding, so deeply rewarding, that I suggest that humans have a natural tendency to be addicted to something. We'll get addicted to something really cool like this and get into it. And automatically, you're tuning into the quantum field.
Right. Get addicted to something that's constructive and get addicted to the quantum field. I love that. Okay, we're going to take our time out right now, and we're going to be back with Dr. May. Hello, hello. Okay, this is Tara, and I'm with Dr. Elliot Maynard. And we were just talking about asking questions. And I know that you say in your book about asking the right questions. And I think you have, or there's two specific questions or two things to ask. Go ahead and talk about that, if you will.
Can you be a little bit more specific on that? I lost you there somewhere.
Let's see. And I'm looking at my, or looking for my notes. You're saying, you're talking about asking the right questions, not like you were saying a minute ago. Well, I mean, you can, of course you can. Is this the right boyfriend for me? Is this the right spouse for me? Give me a yes or no answer. Or, but I think what really in your book you're talking about is a broader and deeper level. Not that love, please folks, love is a very important thing, but how we can how we can understand more about what to do on this earth to evolve, those types of questions. Didn't I read that in your book somewhere? I think I did.
yes, this is very, very important. In other words, after, you know, with the channeling business, for one thing, people, yes, they always want to know how their Aunt Millie is doing, who just passed away, and their dog, and this and that. And these are important things, and they're very accessible. Ultimately, as you kind of mentioned, what we really want to do is become able to channel these sources ourselves. And this is a kind of thing that comes very often very slowly, sometimes all of a sudden, but it can bring the greatest feeling of fulfillment, because it lacks the frustrations of trying to do things in the physical realm, where you always seem to get caught up in one cow pie after another if you start something new and fresh. You know how that works.
Right.
Mr. Murphy shows up.
Exactly. So these are tools that we can use to, like you said, expand our intuition, because, well, we could even do it without it, and it's closer to the to our spiritual being. And speaking of that, I want to talk to you about two life-changing incidences that you've had in your life. One, when I was reading in your book, you had an experience in high school when you and a friend were fishing, and he accidentally drowned, and you vowed to turn that tragedy into a life lesson, or a life meaning, I guess you will, if you will. And then also, if you don't mind expanding a little bit on your last wife, what happened in that scenario? It's fascinating.
Well, yes, in my junior year in high school, I took a friend diving. He was very popular. He was president of the class at that time in Maine in the high school I went to, and he panicked and went under, tried to pull me under. We had a float, an inflated inner tube. We're collecting lobsters out in a cove in Maine, and I talked him into backing off and trying to relax him so he would stay up on the surface. But he had a lobster gauge that pulled across the inner tube and broke it. And so that caused him to sink, and he went right to the bottom. And I went down and cut his gear off him and brought him right up and onto the stern of a fishing boat. And to make a long story short, he didn't survive. The doctor came later, and that was it. And I remember thinking later during the funeral and all that went with it, that he looked like a stuffed fish, and I didn't think that person in the coffin had much relationship to my friend, and so I simply made some life changes that I would work better on my spelling in English because he was very good at that. And his mother, after she screamed at me, "Why was it you that came back?" eventually gave me his dictionary, which I took to private school with me when I went for a year. Now, later on, my wife passed away. My wife of 35 years woke up one morning. We were going to take a trip to Costa Rica, but we had to cancel that. She was taken, I took her into emergency, and she was flown by helicopter down to Phoenix. We're in Sedona, Arizona. And I drove down there. By the time I got there, she was in surgery. She came out. She never regained consciousness, and essentially I had to shut her machines off. I was watching very carefully. I'm pretty well schooled, and the nurse told me we can keep pumping her full of these drugs and things, but she is very likely to have brain damage. So I said, just turn the machines off. And she would have done the same for me. And a couple of months prior to that, she said something to me which kind of hurt me. It said, you know, if you love something, you must set it free. And that kind of twisted my gut, you know, that visceral thing that comes sneaking up. But, right. You know, that was true. And when I was finally able to do that, I refused to let the death barrier exist as it did. And so I think I partially got pulled on to the other side and managed to keep one foot down here. And she actually has helped find me a new mate and done things so amazing that I don't even sometimes tell other people because it sounds like I'm a wingnut or something. But I guarantee you that this would be a very different world. And there's plenty of proof now of people coming back from the other side. I just want to add a little something here that I think would be of interest to all our listeners.
Sure.
Strangely, remarkably, the fact that all of the big pharma has improved the scanning procedures and all kinds of surgical procedures has allowed more and more people to actually be resuscitated and they've spent time on the other side. And I have personally met several people who say they don't care. They say, I don't care when I die. It doesn't matter to me. It's great. And so the whole business of dying should be something we look forward to as a graduation. We get rid of all the old aches and pains of the motivated meat box we carry around and call a body. And when somebody does this, we don't have to pray to God, like when I was a little kid, don't let mommy and daddy die and all this stuff.
Right.
It's simply a graduation process, and we can all look forward to it. What a different world it would be, wouldn't it?
Oh, it would be so different. I tell you, a graduation, and to really not fear it, to not fear it.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
Those ourselves, and of course, those we love so much. I've spoken about this many times, but a 14-year-old dog, and you know, she's doing okay. And I know I'll see her again. Don't you feel that we will see our pets again, not only our human selves, but our pets as well?
Well, yes, it's nice that you brought that up, and I tell about this in the book. I had a cat, blue-eyed, he was half Siamese and half tabby that I'd gotten at the Humane Society. And he survived my wife, and although he had degenerative kidney diseases, he managed to get himself around. And I knew he was going to pass, so I had this lady who was a psychic animal communicator come over to the house, and she sat the cat, whose name was Daisy, in her lap, and he told her where he wanted to be buried. He said that the reason he had pestered me so many times, I was here by myself for quite a while, when I was working on the computer, he would reach up and use his paw to annoy me. He said he didn't want me to get stuck on that computer too long.
Good for
him.
He
knew about the pack. Now, this is interesting. He said he knew all about the pack rat. This pack rat had eaten the wiring on a Lexus crossover that I had. I had to take it down to Phoenix to get serviced. I had a loaner brought it back, and the pack rat ate the wiring on the loaner and cost me enough. The engine had to be removed on the first car.
Oh my God.
So this is cat stuff. I mean, who can make this sort of thing up?
You know, you can't. That's the whole thing. The animals are so amazing. And in fact, animals and kids too, because we're going to break in a minute, but I want to mention our last break. I want to mention two of the names of your childhood friends, which fits so perfectly with who could make this up.
So we are going to. I know.
It is so funny. We are going to a quick break, and we will be right back with Dr. Elliot Maynard. Hello, hello. Welcome back. Now, we are talking with Dr. Elliot Maynard, and he was just talking about his cat, and also in his book, he's talking about when he's growing up, he has two separate friends. In fact, I don't even think they lived in the same town. It's when you moved, and both of their fathers were they're not I was getting ready to say
taxidermists.
Undertakers, thank you, morticians. There you go. I was looking at the first one's name or the second one's name, but they were morticians. And his name was David Angel, and the second one is Taxi Davis. That is so funny. And like you said, you can't make this stuff up, right?
Oh, yes, that's true. Yeah, it's stranger than fiction. When I look back on it, I don't know what got into us, but we did these things, you know, and I relate those stories. Go ahead.
Yeah, no, and I was just reading about that and thinking that is so funny, because you've had so many life experiences that it feels like that the other side, the spiritual side, the afterlife communication, whatever, is messaging you, and they're asking you to incorporate science and this together. And that's what you've done, right? I mean, you have really said, here you are, here's what I've, my experience is, and here's the science behind it, and see what you think. Do your own research, see what you think, right?
Absolutely, and there's no question in my mind, if you want documented proof, all you have to do is read the books that are being put out. You know, The Joy of Dying is the name of one, I believe, and people are starting to, if I had a conversation with one of the best healers on the planet, an intuitive healer, and we decided that there are a certain group of people who don't want to be healed because they identify so much with their ailments. There's another smaller percentage that needs the karmic lessons, and then the others are open to the healing to take place. And the more this kind of thing is actually done in front of other people, and the more we speak about it, the less of a threat it becomes. And the more people will reach out and embrace this technology. And in doing so, we make this technology stronger, because that's the way the quantum field works.
Yes, absolutely. You know, two things on that. I have a friend who told me recently that her knee had been hurting her. It hurts off and on. And she had a dance class one evening, and she really wanted to go to the dance class. And she talked to her knee, and she said, okay, I acknowledge the pain. I love you. I'm, you know, ready to go to dance. And she said it really did quit hurting. Now, she's had it, you know, it has come back, but what you're saying, if we really acknowledge that the healing, we can heal ourselves or through other healers, right?
Absolutely. And I do encourage people, you know, if you go to some of these old retirement communities, people are talking about my operation, and, oh, I have the best doctor and such and such. They're so attached to this. It's sad commentary that there is a small segment, a significant segment of our population who identifies with having surgery and getting attention from the medical staff because their lives are so empty. The healing, to get back to this a little bit, one of the things that sometimes I always encourage people, when you go to a healer or a doctor or a surgeon or anyone, you need to be ready to facilitate and work with this person who's going to get you healed. And if you're not ready to do that, don't waste the time. And I have experienced miraculous kinds of healing with a severe case of sciatica where I couldn't straighten my body up for 6 months or so and have it fixed so that I could hop on my tractor and go out and work on the property here, which is one of my favorite things to do.
Absolutely.
And so the acceptance of healing, and the other thing is that very often, just as with conventional medicine, sometimes you need another session or two or three sessions or several sessions with these healers. Mm-hmm. Again, the only test is it working for you? Is it making you feel better? And even by making you feel better, a good doctor will make you feel better when you go into his office, and sometimes that's all that's necessary. Now, with my Hopi medicine lady friend, I could go up to the reservation and sit down beside her. And after about 5 minutes, I didn't have any aches and pains that I had when the day started, maybe.
Wow. She had some great energy. Yeah.
Oh, yes. And so just acknowledging this, and you're an empath, and I didn't know I was empath until fairly recently. And my God, how much easier our childhoods would have been if we knew about this earlier.
Absolutely. I didn't know about mine until later on in life. I'm like, that's why my body's so sensitive. if we know that, and if we're not afraid to, and like you said, things are opening up more and more to this type of information. But if we know about that, then we can pay attention and work with it. So, yeah.
And the other thing is, when in working in the quantum realm with this new construct, healing can be accomplished very easily, very often with a practitioner over the phone. And this is because it's a non-local phenomenon. It isn't linear. And remember the CD example that I put up, you want to go to a certain spot, you go there. And so this healing can take place halfway around the world. And this has been done thousands of times, and they're all documented for you to research. And everything that I write about in the book, nearly everything, I have experienced certain aspects myself. So I just felt compelled to share this if I can make one person's life a little easier for them.
Oh, that's so nice. You know, it is interesting. It can be done over the phone. And you know, I myself do energy healing. There's a group of us here in the Austin area. Someone came up with a co-op idea. And we've met several times. We're meeting again this Tuesday. And just as an alternative to modern medicine, because we all do energy work. But, you know, we're talking about, in your book, you say, you can incorporate modern medicine and energy work together, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And just as I mentioned that in my world, the White House would have a psychic cabinet segment, just to hold the energy, first of all, for the whole country and the world. And this needs to be expanded to global proportions. In the quantum realm, there's no difference, theoretically speaking, from healing one person and changing the consciousness and the globe. So we need more people to be aware of this, and more people who are working from the heart, connecting the heart and the mind up, so we have this expectation of doing something positive for the world, not using that power in the wrong way, which many people have in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. It is coming from the heart space. Or I know, you know, for me, when I work with people, it really is. It's coming from a very positive, pure, the zero point field, really. You say in the book, a friend of yours who is a senior research engineer, talks about some of the companies he's worked for that have alien artifacts in their possession. And I'm just like, wow. So how does this affect our technology? Do you think that we've used some of these artifacts to affect technology or to work with technology?
There's no question about it. And the cat's out of the bag for the simple reason that what happens on any, especially military incident like Roswell, is that people have these deathbed confessions or they leave some letters or and things. I have seen pictures of the crashed Roswell ship that show the there is a panel in the what would be the bridge of a ship, and it has places to put the hands so that the human the consciousness of the pilot connects with the intelligence of the ship, the artificial intelligence.
Interesting.
But the little imprints have only four fingers on them.
Oh.
Three and a thumb.
That's really interesting.
Yes. And I talked with an aerospace engineer who worked with the Lockheed Martin Skunk Works, and he told me that people don't know. They have invented using alien technology. To get back to Roswell, the reason we have fiber optics, microcircuitry, laser technology, and two or three other things, if you look about that time and give it time to be developed and researched, about 20 years after that, it brings us to 1975. Then in 1980, things took off and all kinds of technology expanded.
Wow. Yeah, you know, my husband's from West Texas, and so to go over to Roswell is, you know, just a few hours or so. And it really is an amazing thing, all of this. And he and I actually were recently out and about, and in the sky we saw two silver, I can't even say they were discs, just silver lights, and they were moving at very fast speed, and then one disappeared, the other disappeared. It's not like out of view, but it's just out. And so,
yes.
Yeah, go ahead. What
that's
were you
going to say? That's one of the signs that you are seeing a UFO if the light just suddenly disappears. And I'm not talking about an aircraft landing light. We all know what those look like. But it's a light like it would look like that. It would be way up in the sky somewhere. You couldn't tell the altitude. And suddenly it winks out and there's no cloud or anything there. That's when you know that it's a UFO. And sometimes you can get them to signal you or something. Now, I've always wanted to have that kind of experience. But I have not directly with a craft, although I've been very close to people who have had those experiences. Mm-hmm. And I'm convinced that the reason is that if I got to take a ride in a UFO, I wouldn't want to come back here to this physical realm. And so I only get the taste of the apple, the forbidden fruit right now. But that's okay.
Yeah, you're supposed to stay here for a while.
Yes.
Well, that's very interesting. Thank you for validating that. I can't wait to tell my husband because he hasn't stopped talking about it. It's been, I don't know, 6 or 8 months, and it was in daylight. So I will tell him that that was for sure an alien spacecraft. Wow. Well, this has been absolutely fascinating, Dr. E. I so appreciate your being on with us today. And I encourage everyone to look for his book, Brave New Mind, Living in a Future Science World. And there's all kinds of goodies and tidbits and what we can do to evolutionize ourselves into the next third millennium, which is going to be really interesting.
Wow, I like that word you just – did you coin that?
Which word are you talking about?
Evolutionize.
You know, it just came out from the head, tongue out. So what can I say? Uh-huh. No, I did. So are you coming back for the third millennium?
It's already here.
Right,
yes.
Right.
This book was written. Now, you know, during a channeling session, they said that this book would The book I had written before, which is mostly about physical phenomena, global ecology, called Transforming the Global Biosphere, 12 Futuristic Strategies, they said that book that most of those, or many of those technologies will be implemented in my lifetime. They said that this book, which I was beginning at the time, would be good for 3,000 years. So there you go.
Wow.
I didn't say it, and I'm just passing it on because somebody might find it interesting, and you can check it out yourself.
Wow. I think that's pretty amazing. Oh, wow.
Well, so do I, and I'm touched because isn't this what you want to do, is to pass on something wonderful to the future generations?
Yes. Yes. Absolutely. The University of the Future. I saw where you used that phrase somewhere. So let's call it that, the University of the Future, and so that we can use this for future generations. Well,
yes.
Well, this has been an absolute pleasure. I so appreciate your being on today and sharing all of your wealth of information, your experience with us, so that we can do that very thing.
Well, you're welcome. I'm absolutely always delighted, and I reach out to all of our listeners everywhere in the world, and I know some of you may be in a very cold place right now, or a place that seems to be very desperate, but the spirit is like a flame that will keep burning, and you just need to feed that, and hopefully the positive energy we send out will bring a bright new day for you too.
Oh, that is so, so beautiful. I'm going to re-listen to this recording just because I want to hear that very sentence again. Where there is, what was it that Dr. Hawking said? Where there is life, there is hope. And so there's a lot of hope, and there's a lot to look forward to, and to fulfill our dreams and to care about those we love. So, again, thank you so much for being on, and look forward to talking with everyone soon. Again, I'm Tara Ventura, themagicalmatrix.com, or my email is themagicalmatrix@gmail.com, or reach out to Dr. Elliot Maynard. We've had a fascinating time. Thanks so much, everyone. See you soon.